Old Theatre. The Sybil Thorndyke Festival, in which Dame Sybil stars in some of her favourite plays. This evening, as the eighth and last production in her festival, Dame Sybil has chosen to appear as Lady Cicely Wainfleet in Captain Brassband's Conversion, which Bernard Shaw wrote in 1899. Starring with Dame Sybil in her are Cecil Parker as Sir Howard Hallam and Gabriel Wolfe as Captain Brassband. Captain Brassband's Conversion by Bernard Shaw.
On the heights overlooking the harbour of Mogador, a seaport on the west coast of Morocco, a missionary in the coolness of the late afternoon is following the precept of Voltaire by cultivating his garden. The view from the garden includes much Atlantic Ocean and a long stretch of sandy coast to the south, swept by the northeast trade wind and scantily nourishing a few stunted pepper trees, mangy palms, and tamarisks. The missionary, having had daily opportunities of looking at this seascape for 30 years or so, pays no heed to it, being absorbed in trimming a huge red geranium bush, to English which, with a dusty smilax or two, is the sole product of his flower bed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Rankin, sir.
Hmm?
Your Honour's
elf. Good afternoon, Mr. Drinkwater.
You're not by the like of me, Governor.
Our missionary knows nothing of licks of that sort or of dislikes either, Mr. Drinkwater. Now, what can I do for you?
Oh, nothing, Governor. I've brought news for you.
Well, sit you down.
Oh, thank you, Your Honour. Well, did you ever hear of Judge Hallam?
Sir Howard Hallam?
That's him. Hanging his judge in England. Always gives the cat when it's robbery with violence, bless his heart. I say nothing against him, mind. I'm all for law myself, I am.
Well?
Did you ever hear of his sister-in-law, Lady Cicely Wainfleet?
Do you mean the celebrated lady? The traveller?
Yes, I think I do. Walked across Africa, she did, with nothing but a little dog and wrote about it in the Daily Mail.
Is she Sir Howard Hallam's sister-in-law?
Deceased wife's sister, yes, that's what she is.
Well, what about them?
What about them? Well, they're here.
Here?
They landed out of a steam yacht in Mogador Harbour, not... He'll send them on to you. He ain't got nowhere to put them. I saw them hiring a hay rab and two crew boys to carry their luggage, so I thought I'd come and tell you.
Oh, thank you. It's very kind of you, Mr. Drinkwater.
Oh, don't mention it, Governor. Oh, Lord bless you. Wouldn't it you has converted me? What was I when I come here but a poor lost sinner? Don't I owe you a turn for that? Besides, Governor, this Lady Cicely Wainfleet, see, might want to take a walk across Morocco and ride into the mountains or such like. Well, as you know, Governor, that can't be done here without a escort.
It's impossible. They would all be murdered. Morocco's not like the rest of Africa.
No, Governor. These here Moors has their religion, and it makes them dangerous. Well, as I was saying, friend and commander, Captain Brassband of the schooner Thanksgiving, and his crew, including myself, will see the lady and Judge Hallam through any little excursion. In reason, of course. Your Honour might mention it.
I will certainly not propose anything so dangerous as an excursion.
Oh, no, Governor. Oh, nor would I ask you to. No, it is dangerous. But all the more call for an escort if they should have it in their minds to go, eh?
I hope they won't.
And so do I.
It's strange that they should come to Mogador of all places, and to my house. This Lady Cicely, how old would she be?
Oh, she's a real lady. 35-ish.
Yeah, I once met Sir Howard Hallam years ago.
Oh, did you? Oh, think of that, Governor. Well, I suppose did I, too. Mind you, that was a misunderstanding, that was. I left the court without a stain on me character, I did.
I hope you don't think I met Sir Howard in that way.
Well, it might happen to the honest, best meaning person, I do assure you, Governor.
I would have you know that I met him privately, Mr. Drinkwater.
Oh.
His brother was a dear friend of mine years ago. He went out to the West Indies.
Oh, yeah. Well, look, I'll say good afternoon. You're busy expecting Sir Howard and Lady Cicely, ain't you?
No, stop. We're always ready for travellers here. I have something else to say. A question to ask you. Captain Brassbound.
Captain Brassband? He's like my captain.
Yes, well.
Captain of the schooner Thanksgiving, Governor.
Have you ever heard of a bad character in these seas called Black Paquito?
Oh, now I take you with me. Someone has been telling you that Captain Brassband and Black Paquito is identically the same person, isn't that so?
That is so. And is Captain Brassbound Black Paquito, then?
Well, it's just the name his blessed mother gave him at her knee, bless his little heart. There ain't no harm in that. She was a West Indian. At least, no, she wasn't. She was a Brazilian, I think. Anyway, Paquito's Brazilian, see, for a little parrot. Like an English lady might call a little boy birdie.
Yeah, but why black, Paquito?
Well, the bird, in its natural state being green, and him having black hair, you know...
I see. Yeah. And now I will put you another question. On your faith as a Christian, Felix Drinkwater, is Captain Brassbone a slaver or not?
No, he ain't. That, just to show you a little. To which Captain Brassbone served apprentice, as you might say.
I don't know.
Golden, Governor. Golden. Golden of Khartoum. His statue stands in Trafalgar Square to this very day. Trained Black Paquito in smashing up the slave traders, he done. Promised Golden he would never smuggle slaves nor gin, and won't, Governor. Not if we go down on our bended knees to him to do it.
And do you go down on your bended knees to him to do it?
Well, some of us is unconverted men, Governor. And they say to him, you smuggles one thing, Captain, why not another?
Well, we've come to it at last. I thought so. Captain Brassbone is a smuggler.
Well, why not? Why not? As is a free trade nation. It goes against us Englishmen to see these blooming foreigners setting up their customs houses and spheres of influence and such like all over Africa. Doesn't Africa belong just as much to us as to them, then? That's what we say. Anyway, there ain't no harm in our business. All we does is escort tourists or commercial. Cook's excursions to the Hatless Mountains, that's all it is. Why, spreading civilization it is. Ain't it now?
You think Captain Brassbone's crew sufficiently equipped for that, do you?
Equipped? I should think so. Lightning rifles, 12 shots in the magazine, who's to stop us?
The most dangerous chieftain in these parts, the Sheikh Sidi El Asif, has a new American machine pistol which fires 10 bullets without loading, and his rifle has 16 shots in the magazine.
Oh.
Well, have you anything else to say to me this afternoon?
Nothing, Governor. Except to wish you the best of health and many converts.
Sikoros, I have brought to your house a Christian dog and his woman.
Well, there's even manners for you. Call Sir Howard Allam and Lady Wainfleet a Christian dog and his woman. If he had you in the dock at a central criminal, mate, you'd find out who was the dog and who was the master pretty quick, you would.
Have you brought their boxes?
By Allah, 2 camel loads.
How do you do? Are you the missionary?
No, lady. I will not deceive you, though the mistake is but natural. Now, I'm one of the missionary's good works, lady. His first convert, a humble British seaman, countryman of yours, lady, and of his lordship. Now, this is Mr. Rankin, my best worker in the West Coast Vineyard. Mr. Rankin, his lordship, Sir Howard Allam.
I'm sorry to intrude on you, Mr. Rankin, but in the absence of an hotel, there seems to be no alternative.
Besides, we'd so much rather stay with you if you'll have us, Mr. Rankin.
My sister-in-law, Lady Cicely Wainfleet, Mr. Rankin.
I'm glad to be of service to your ladyship. You'll be wishing to have some tea after your journey, I'm thinking.
Oh, thoughtful man that you are, Mr. Rankin. But we've had some already on board the yacht. And I've arranged everything with your servants, so you must go on gardening just as if we weren't here.
I'm sorry to have to warn you, Mr. Rankin, but Lady Cicely, from travelling in African people's houses and behaving as if she were in her own.
My dear Howard, I assure you the natives like it.
So do I.
Oh, that's so nice of you, Mr. Rankin. This is a delicious country. The people seem so good. They have such nice faces. You know, we had such a handsome moor to carry our luggage up, and 2 perfect pets of crew boys. Oh, yes, I think this is a perfectly heavenly place.
Asking your pardon for the liberty, Sir Howard, of giving you a chair.
I've seen you before somewhere.
You have, Sir Howard, but I do assure you it was all a mistake.
As usual. Yes. Wrongfully convicted, of course.
No, Governor.
Indeed. That's the first case of the kind I've ever met.
Oh, Lord, Sir Howard, what juggins is them jury memoirs? You and me knew it too, didn't we?
I dare say we did. I'm sorry to say I forget the exact nature of the difficulty you were in. Can you refresh my memory?
It was only the high spirits of youth, your lordship. Waterloo Road case, it was what they call hooliganism.
Oh, you were a hooligan, were you?
A hooligan?
Just a name given us poor, faultless lads by a gent on the Daily Chronicle, lady. Well, I'll hang about within hail, Mr. Rankin, in case I should be wanted.
Very well.
What a pleasant face your sailor friend has, Mr. Rankin. He's been so frank and truthful with us. You know, I don't think anybody can pay me a greater compliment than to be quite sincere with me at first sight. It's the perfection of natural good manners.
You mustn't suppose, Mr. Rankin, that my sister-in-law talks nonsense on purpose. Especially he steals her watch, and even then she'll find excuses for him.
And how have you been, Sir Howard, since our last meeting that morning nigh 40 years ago down at the docks in London?
Our last meeting, Mr. Rankin? Have I been unfortunate enough to forget an old acquaintance?
Well, perhaps hardly an acquaintance, Sir Howard, but I was a close friend of your brother Miles. And when he sailed for Brazil, I was one of the little party that saw him off. You were one of the party also, if I'm not mistaken. I took particular notice of you because you were Miles's brother and I had never seen you before. But you had no call to take notice of me.
Yes, yes. There was a young friend of my brother's who might well be you, but the name, as I recollect it, was Leslie.
That was me, sir. My name is Leslie Rankin. And your brother and I were always Miles and...
Benzit. I can trust my memory still, Mr. Rankin, though some people do complain that I'm growing old.
And where may Miles be now, Sir Howard?
Well, don't you know that he's dead?
Never heard of it. Oh, dear, dear. I shall never see him again, and I can scarcely bring his face to mind after all these years. I'm right sorry, right sorry.
Yes, he didn't live long. Indeed, he never came back to England. It must be nearly 30 years ago now that he died in the West Indies on his property there.
His property? Miles with a property.
Yes, he became a planter and did very well out there. The history of that property is a very curious and interesting one. At least it is so to a lawyer like myself.
Well, I should be glad to hear it for Miles' sake, although I am no lawyer, Sir Howard.
I never knew you had a brother, Howard.
Well, perhaps because you never asked me.
Oh.
I'll tell you the story, Mr. Rank. He left an estate in one of the West Indian islands. It was in charge of an agent who was a sharpish fellow with all his wits about him. Now, sir... that man did a thing which probably could hardly be done with impunity, even here in Morocco, the most barbarous of surviving civilizations. He quite simply took the estate for himself and kept it.
But how about the law?
The law, sir, in that island consisted practically of the Attorney General and the Solicitor General. And these gentlemen were both retained by the agent. Consequently, there was no solicitor in the island to take up the case against him.
Is such a thing possible today in the British Empire?
Oh, quite, quite.
But couldn't a first-rate solicitor have been sent out from London?
Oh, no doubt, by paying him enough to compensate him for giving up his London practice. That is rather more than there was any reasonable likelihood of the estate proving worth.
Then the estate was lost?
Not permanently, no. It is in my hands at present.
And how did you get it back?
By hoisting the rogue with his own petard.
Oh?
I had to leave the matters as they were for many years, but I had my own position in the world to make. But at last I made it. Now, in the course of a holiday trip to the West Indies, I found that this dishonest agent had left the island and placed the estate in the hands of an agent of his own, whom he was foolish enough to pay very badly. And he decided to treat the estate as my property. The robber now found himself in exactly the same position he had formerly forced me into. Nobody in the island would act against me, least of all the Attorney General or the Solicitor General, who appreciated my influence at the Colonial Office. So I got the estate back. The mills of the gods grind slowly, Mr. Rankin, but they grind exceeding small.
Now, as a villain, you'd have sent me to prison.
Probably, unless you had taken care to keep outside the law against conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you wish to do anything against the law, Cicely, always consult a good solicitor first.
Oh, so I do. But suppose your agent takes it into his head to give the estate back to his wicked old employer.
I heartily wish he would.
You wish he would?
Yes. A few years ago, the collapse of the West Indian sugar industry converted the income of the estate into an annual loss of £150 a year. If I can't sell it soon, I shall simply abandon it, unless you, Mr. Rankin, would like to take it as a present.
I thank your lordship. We have... You're sitting with your back to the sun, Lady Cicely, and losing something worth looking at. See there.
Oh, how lovely.
What are those hills over there to the southeast?
They are the outposts, so to speak, of the Atlas Mountains.
The Atlas Mountains? What, where Shelley's witch lived? We'll make an excursion to them tomorrow, Howard.
It's not safe, Lady Cicely. Really and truly, it is not safe. The tribes are very fierce. And there are cities here that no Christian has ever set foot in.
Oh, but I always go everywhere. I know the people won't touch me. They have such nice faces and such pretty scenery.
You can imagine how much use there is in talking to a woman who admires the faces of ruffians who infest these ports, Mr. Rankin. Can anything be done in the way of an escort?
Well, there is a certain Captain Brassbound here who trades along the coast and occasionally escorts parties of merchants on journeys into the interior. I understand that he served under Gordon in the Sudan.
Oh, that sounds promising. But I should like to know a little more about him before I trust myself in his hands.
I quite agree with you, Sir Howard. I'll send Felix Drinkwater for him. Muley, is Sailor Man here?
Yes, Master.
Tell Sailor Man bring Captain.
Who is Drinkwater?
His agent or mate, I don't rightly know which. You saw him here just now. He is a convert of mine.
Oh, that nice, truthful sailor.
What, the hooligan?
The hooligan? Oh, no, my lord, he's an Englishman.
My dear Mr. Rankin, this man was tried before me on a charge of street ruffianism.
Ah, so he told me. He was badly brought up, I'm afraid. But he is now a converted man.
Of course he is. His telling you so frankly proves it. You know, who try are more sinned against than sinning. If you would only talk to them in a friendly way instead of passing cruel sentences on them, you'd find them quite nice to you. I won't have this poor man trampled on merely because his mother brought him up as a hooligan. I'm sure nobody could be nicer than he was when he spoke to us.
In short, we're to have an escort of hooligans commanded by a filibuster. Very well, very well. You will most likely admire all their faces, and I've no doubt at all that they will admire yours.
Your Honour's servant, Marzo, his lordship, Sir Howard Adam.
Signore.
Ladyship, Lady Wainfleet, shipmate lady, our chef.
How do you do? I love Italy. What part of it were you born in?
Well, signora...
He wasn't born in Italy at all. He was born in Hatton Garden. Ice Baron Street Piano, Italian lady, that's what he is.
What,
really? Captain's brass-bound respects to your honours, and he awaits your command.
Shall we go indoors to see him?
I think we'd better have a look at him by daylight.
Well, then we must lose no time. The dark is soon down in this latitude. Will you ask him to step out here to us, Mr. Drinkwater?
Right you are, Governor.
Ooh, don't you feel rather creepy, Mr. Rankin? I wonder what he'll be like.
I misdoubt me he will not answer, your ladyship.
Captain Brassbear.
Well, sir, have you stared your fill at me?
I ask your pardon for my bad manners, Captain Brassbear. You are extraordinary, like an old college friend of mine whose face I said not 10 minutes gone that I could no longer bring to mind. It was as if he had come from the grave to remind me of it.
Why do you send for me?
We have a matter of business with you, Captain.
Who are we?
This is Sir Howard Hallam, who will be well known to you as one of Her Majesty's judges.
The friend of the widow. The protector of the fatherless.
I didn't know I was so favorably spoken of in these parts, Captain Brassbear. We want an escort for a trip into the mountains.
Who is the lady?
Lady Cicely Wainfleet, his lordship's sister-in-law.
How do you do, Captain Brassbear?
Let us come to business, if you please. We're thinking of making a short excursion to see the country around here. Could you provide us with an escort of respectable, trustworthy men?
Where do you propose to go?
Well, I hardly know. Where can we go, Mr. Rankin?
Take my advice, Sir Howard. Don't go far.
I can take you to Mascala, from which you can see the Atlas Mountains. From Mascala, I can take you to an ancient castle in the hills, where you can put up as long as you please. The customary charge is $0.50 a man per day on his feed. I charge double.
I suppose you answer for your men being sturdy fellows who will stand to their guns if necessary?
I can answer for their being more afraid of me than of the Moors.
Oh, but that doesn't matter in the least, Howard. The important thing, Captain Brassbound, is first that we should have as few men as possible, because men give such a lot of trouble, have good lungs, and not be always catching cold. And above all, their clothes must be of good wearing material. Otherwise, I shall be nursing and stitching and mending all the way, and it'll be trouble enough, I assure you, to keep them washed and fed without that.
Madam, if you want an escort, I can provide you with an escort. If you want a Sunday school treat, I can't provide it.
Oh, don't you wish you could, Captain? Oh, I could only show you my children from Wainfleet Sunday School. The darlings would love this place with all the camels and black men, and I'm sure you'd enjoy having them here, Captain Brassbound, and it would be such an education for your men.
Cicely, when you've done talking, you can proceed to make some definite arrangement with him.
But it's arranged already. We'll start at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, if you please, Captain. Now, you go home to bed, and don't fuss yourself. All you have to do is to bring your men round, and I'll see to the rest. Men are always so nervous about moving, aren't they? Well, good night.
Sir Howard Hallam, I advise you not to attempt this expedition.
Indeed? Why?
You're safe here. I warn you, in those hills, there is a justice that is not the justice of your courts in England. If you have wronged a man, you may meet that man there. If you have wronged a woman, you may meet her son there. The justice of those hills is the justice of vengeance.
You are superstitious, Captain. Most sailors are complete confidence in your escort.
Take care. The Avenger may be one of the escort.
I have already met the only member of your escort who might have borne a grudge against me, Captain, and he was acquitted.
You're fated to come, then.
It seems so.
On your head be it.
Midday, in a room in a Moorish castle. Two or three of Brassband's men, overcome by the midday heat, sprawl supine on the floor, with their reefer coats under their heads, their knees uplifted, and their calves laid comfortably on to where shirts have them open at the throat for greater coolness. Some have jerseys. All wear boots and belts, and have guns ready to their hands. The silence is broken only by the snores of a young gentleman.
Wait, wake up there, will you? Wake up. Now, come on.
Get up there, will you, Kitty Red Book.
Will you? What's amiss?
What's amiss? You didn't hear no firing, I suppose.
No?
No, thought it safer not to, didn't you?
What? You're running away, are you? Hang alive, Johnny, there's danger.
Danger? Yeah, I should think there was danger. It's over, though, as it mostly is by the time you're awake. Why wasn't you on the lookout to give us an hand? We've been attacked by the Beniseris, we have.
What?
And we've had to ride for it pretty straight, too, I can tell you. Marks owes it. The bullet glanced all round his blooming brisket. Yeah, brass band. He dropped the Shike's horse at 650 yards. So, now then, come on, get the place ready for the British aristocracy, Lord Adam and Lady Wainfleet.
Lady faint, is she?
Faint, not likely. She wanted to go and talk to the Beniseris. Blow me if she didn't. She asked what we was frightened of. Tying up Marzo's wound, she is, like a blooming hospital nurse.
Oh, welcome to Brassbound Castle, Sir Howard and Lady. This here is the coffee and commercial room.
Where is Marzo's bed?
His bed, Lady. Well, he ain't particular. He has his choice of any of the flagstones against that wall.
Oh, but you can't leave him there in that state.
Well, he's all right. You're all right, ain't you, Marzo? Yeah, of course you are.
Oh. Did you ever see such a helpless lot of poor creature?
And where might your ladyship be going?
I'm going through every room in this castle to find a proper place to put that man. And now I'll tell you where you're going. You're going to get some water for Marzo, who's very thirsty. And then, when I've chosen a room for him, you're going to make a bed for him there.
Oh, yeah.
But don't go if you'd rather not, Mr. Drinkwater. Perhaps you're too tired. I'll ask Captain Brassbound. He won't mind.
Oh, no, look, don't you go disturbing the captain, Lady. I'll see to it.
Yes, I'm sure you would, Mr. Drinkwater. You have such a kind face.
Go on.
Now, will you ask one of your friends to show me to my room whilst you're getting the water?
Oh, your room? This ain't good enough for you, is it? I know you're ordering about, anyway.
Well, can you find me a more private room than this?
I have no orders. You must wait till the captain comes, sir.
And while you're waiting, you'll take your orders from me, see?
Look here, Drinkwater. Do you see three gentlemen talking to one another here, civil and private, eh?
No offence, Mr. Johnson.
Aye, but there is offence. Where's your manners, you good as knife? That's the curse of this kind of life, sir. You've got to associate with all sorts. My father, sir, was Captain Johnson or Hull. Owned his own schooner, sir. We're mostly gentlemen here, sir, as you'll find. Except the poor ignorant foreigner and that there scum of a submerged tent, eh? In no such
class feeling, that's what that is. Class feeling. And what are you after all but a blooming gang of casual wall paupers, eh? It's better to have no family and rise out of it like me than have a respectable one and disgrace it like you.
I name you for conduct and language unbecoming to a gentleman. Those who agree will signify the same in the usual manner.
No.
Felix Drinkwater, are you going out or are you going to wait until you're kicked out? You can cry in passage. If you give any trouble, you'll have something to cry for.
You leave me alone. I'm going. There's no more true democratic feeling here than there is in the old blooming M division of Newington Causeway Coppers, West Coast aristocracy. They find my conduct unbecoming to a gentleman.
Have you fetched the water?
Oh, now you start on me.
No, this won't do, Mr. Drinkwater. If you cry, I can't let you nurse your friend.
Oh, that'll break my heart, won't it?
Captain Brassbound, Are there any charwomen in the Atlas Mountains?
There are people here who will work if you pay them, as there are elsewhere.
Yes, this castle is very romantic, Captain, but it hasn't had a spring cleaning since a prophet lived in it. I mean, there's only one room I can put the wounded man into. It's the only one that has a bed in it. The second room on the right, out of the passage. Oh, that's all right, then. It would have been so awkward if I'd had to ask one of your men to turn out. You won't mind, I know.
Pray, madam, have you made any arrangements for my accommodation?
Oh, yes, you can have my room instead, wherever it may be. I'm sure you've chosen me a nice one. I must be near my patient, and I don't mind roughing it. Now I must have Marcho move very carefully. Where is that truly gentlemanly Mr. Johnson? Oh, there you are, Mr. Johnson. Will you ask your strong friend to help you with Marcho? Strong men are always so gentle.
Let me introduce Mr. Redbrook. Your ladyship may know his father, the very Reverend Dean Redbrook.
Happy to oblige you, Lady Cicely.
How do you do? But of course I knew your father. Dunham, wasn't it? But what are you doing here?
Cards and drink, Lady Cicely. Now, come, partner.
Now, they're not hurting you, Marcho. They couldn't be more gentle.
Drink.
Yes, well, I'll get you some water myself. Your friend, Mr. Drinkwater, here was too overcome. Now, the second door on the right.
Well, I am damned.
Well, blimey.
What did you say?
Well, what did you say yourself, Captain? It's the first time I ever see you afraid of anybody.
Afraid?
She's took your bed from under you for a blooming penny, honest man. All right, if you ain't afraid, let's hear you speak up to her when she comes back again.
Sir Howard, I wish you to understand that in this castle it is I who give orders and no one else. Will you be good enough to let Lady Cicely Wainfleet know that?
You will have ample opportunity for speaking to Lady Cicely yourself when she returns.
My manners are rough, Sir Howard. I have no wish to frighten the lady.
Captain Brassbrand, if you can frighten Lady Cicely, if she has any sense of danger, perhaps she'll keep out of it.
Well, sir, if she were 10 Lady Cicely, she must consult me while she is here.
That's right, Captain. Let's hear you establish your authority. Now.
If you feel at all nervous, Captain Brassbound, I'll mention the matter with pleasure.
Nervous, sir? No, nervousness is not in my line. You'll find me perfectly capable of saying what I want to say with considerable emphasis, if necessary.
Here, here.
Now for the water. Where is it?
There's a well in the courtyard. I'll come and work the bucket.
Oh, that's so good of you, Mr. Redbrook.
Captain Brassbound, you got something to say to the lady, ain't you?
Oh, well, I'll come back and hear it presently, Captain. And, oh, while I remember it, do please tell me, Captain, if I interfere with your arrangements in any way. If I disturb you the least bit in the world, stop me at once. I mean, you have all the responsibility, and your comfort and your authority must be the first thing. You will tell me, won't you?
Pray do as you please, madam.
Oh, thank you. That's so like you, Captain. Thank you. Now, Mr. Redbrook, show me the way to the well.
Right, over there.
Oh, shame. Beat by a woman.
What's wrong now?
Don't ask me, Mr. Johnson. The captain's got no class after all.
Johnson, what's she been fixing up in there?
Well, Matzo's in your bed. Lady wants to make a kitchen out of the Sheikh's audience chamber and to put me and the kid Andy in his bedroom in case Matzo gets erysipelas and breaks up violent. From what I can make out, she means to make herself matron of this institution. I suppose it's all right, isn't it? Oh.
Yeah, and order us about as if we was cab touts. And the captain's afraid to talk back at her.
And now, Captain, before I go to poor Marcho, well, what have you to say to me?
Aye?
Governor, be a man.
Oh, but Mr. Drinkwater said you had.
It was only this. That fellow Drinkwater is subject to fits of insolence. If he's impertinent to your ladyship or disobedient, you have my authority to order him as many kicks as you think good for him, and I'll see that he gets them.
Eh?
But I couldn't think of such a thing, Captain Brassbound. I'm sure it'd hurt Mr. Drinkwater.
But a lady's incapable of such barbarous usage.
Yes, but there is one thing I won't mind my mentioning. It's so important if he's to attend on Marcho.
What's that?
Well, you won't mind, Mr. Drinkwater, will you?
What is it?
Well, there would be so much less danger of erysipelas if you would be so good as to take a bath.
A bath?
Stand by, all hands. Take that man to watch him.
I'm afraid he isn't used to it, poor fellow, but really it'll do him good, Captain Brassbound. Now I must be off to my patient.
And now, Captain Brassbound.
I'll attend to you presently. Johnson! Send me Johnson there and Osman!
You seem to be in a strong position with reference to these men of yours.
I'm in a strong position with reference to everyone in this castle.
Yes, I've been noticing that you think so. I don't agree. Her Majesty's long arm and a long arm. If anything disagreeable happens to me or to my sister-in-law, that arm will be stretched out. If that happens, you will not be in a strong position. Excuse my reminding you of it.
Much good may it do you. Johnson! Where's Osmond, the Sheikh's messenger? I want him too.
Come in, Captain. Here he is. He had a prayer to finish.
Osmond Ali.
Master.
You've seen this unbeliever come in with us?
Yea, as who flattered my countenance and offered me her hand.
Aye, and you took it too, Johnny, didn't you?
Take horse, then, and ride fast to your master, the Sheikh Sidi El Asif.
Kinsman to the Prophet.
Tell him what you have seen here. That's all. Johnson, give him a dollar, and note the hour of his going, that his master may know how fast he rides.
The believer's word shall prevail with Allah and his servant, Sidi Al Asif.
Off with you.
Make good thy master's word ere I go out from his presence, O Johnson al-Hal.
He wants the dollar.
Allah will make hell easy for the friend of Sidi Al Asif and his servant.
Johnson, keep the men out of this until the Sheikh comes. I have business to talk over. Together, all. Sidi El Asif's natural instinct will be to cut every Christian throat here.
Well, we look to you, Captain, to square him, since you invited him over.
You can depend on me, and you know it, I think.
Aye, we know it.
You know also, Mr. Johnson, I hope that you can depend on me.
On you, sir?
Yes, on me. If my throat is cut, the Sultan of Morocco may send Sidi's head with $100,000 blood money to the colonial office, but it won't be enough to save his kingdom, any more than it would save your life if your captain did the same thing.
Is that so, Captain?
I know the gentleman's value, perhaps better than he knows it himself. I shall not lose sight of it.
Mr. Johnson. Oh, Mr. Johnson, I've got Marcio to sleep. Would you mind asking the gentleman not to make a noise under his window in the courtyard?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, indeed, ma'am. Right, ma'am.
Are you able to attend to me for a moment, Captain Brassbrown?
What do you want?
Well, I'm afraid I want a little privacy, and if you'll allow me to say so, a little civility. I'm greatly obliged to you for bringing us safely off today when we were attacked. So far, you've carried out your contract. But since we've been your guests here, your tone and that of the worst of your men has changed. Intentionally changed, I think.
You are not my guest. You are my prisoner.
Prisoner?
I warned you. You should have taken my warning.
Am I to understand, then, that you're a brigand? Is it a matter of ransom?
All the wealth of England shall not ransom you.
Then what do you expect to gain by this?
Justice on a thief and a murderer.
Sir, do you apply those terms to me?
Look at him, madam. You wouldn't take this virtuously indignant gentleman to the uncle of a brigand, would you?
Uncle?
But my mother, this fellow who puts on ermine and scarlet and calls himself Justice?
You are the son of that woman.
That woman?
No, take care. You mustn't strike an old man.
He didn't spare my mother, that woman he calls her, because of her sex. I'll not spare him because of his age. But I'm not going to strike him. I shall do no more than justice.
Justice? I think you mean vengeance disguised as justice by your passions.
To many and many a poor wretch in the dock you've brought vengeance in that disguise. The vengeance of society disguised as justice by its passions. And now the justice you've outraged meets you disguised as vengeance. How do you like it?
I shall meet it, I trust, as becomes an innocent man and an upright judge. What do you charge against me?
I charge you with the death of my mother and the theft of my inheritance.
As to your inheritance, sir, it was yours whenever you came forward to claim it. 3 minutes ago, I learned that most solemnly. I never knew, never dreamt, that my brother Miles left a son. As to your mother, well, her case was a hard one. Perhaps the hardest that has come within even my experience. I mentioned it as such to Mr. Rankin, the missionary, the evening we met you. As to her death, you know, you must know that she died in her native country years after our last meeting. Perhaps you were too young to know that she could hardly have expected to live long.
You mean that she drank?
I didn't say so. I don't think she was always accountable for what she did.
Yes, she was mad too. And whether drink drove her to madness or madness drove her to both.
I presume the dishonest agent who seized her estate did.
Oh.
I repeat, it was a hard case, a frightful injustice. But it couldn't have been remedied.
You told her so. When she wouldn't take that false answer, you drove her from your doors. When she exposed you in the street and threatened to take with her own hands the redress the law denied her, you had her imprisoned. You forced her to write you an apology and leave the country to regain her liberty. And when she was gone and dead and forgotten, you found for yourself the remedy you couldn't find for her. You recovered the estate easily enough then, robber and rascal that you are. Did he tell the missionary that, Lady Cicely, eh?
Oh, poor woman. Couldn't you have helped her, Howard?
No. This man may be ignorant enough to suppose that when I was a struggling barrister, I could do everything I did when I was Attorney General. But you know better. She was an uneducated Brazilian, knowing nothing of English society, and driven mad by injustice.
Your defense.
I do not defend myself. I call on you to obey the law.
I intend to do so. The law of the Atlas Mountains is administered by the Sheikh Sidi El Asif. He will be here within an hour. He is a judge like yourself. You can talk law to him. He'll give you both the law and the prophets.
Does he know what the power of England is?
Who are you that a nation should go to war for you? If you're missing, what will your newspapers say? Foolhardy tourist. What will your learned friends at the bar say? That it was time for you to make room for younger and better men. You a national hero. You'd better find a goldfield in the Atlas Mountains. Then all the governments of Europe will rush to your rescue. Until then, take care of yourself. For you're going to see at last the hypocrisy and the sanctimonious speech of the judge who is sentencing you. Instead of the despair in the white face of the wretch you're recommending to the mercy of your God.
I've no more to say to you, sir. I'm not afraid of you, nor of any bandit with whom you may be in league. As to your property, it is ready for you as soon as you come to your senses and claim it as your father's heir. Commit a crime, and you will become an outlaw, and not only lose the property, but shut the doors of civilization against yourself forever.
I'll not sell my mother's revenge for 10 properties.
Besides, really, Howard, as the property now costs £150 a year to keep up instead of bringing in anything, I'm afraid it wouldn't be much use to you.
I must say, Cicely, I think you might have chosen a more suitable moment to...
Baxter! Lawyer! Even the price you offer for your life's to be paid in false coin. Hello there! Johnson, Redbrook, some of you there! For a little privacy, you shall have it. I'll not endure the company of such a fellow. Take him away!
Oh, you insult me, sir! You're a rascal! You're a rascal!
Take this man away!
Oh, where are we to put him?
Put him where you please, so long as you can find him when he's wanted.
Yeah, take your hands off me! You'll be late, my dear! Yes, my man! I'm coming
What are you doing there, madam?
I'm mending your coat, Captain Rothbund.
I've no recollection of asking you to take that trouble.
No, I don't suppose you even knew it was Torm. Some men are born untidy. Well, you can't very well receive Silly or what's his name with your sleeve half out.
I don't know how it got torn.
Well, you shouldn't get virtuously indignant with people. It bursts clothes more than anything else, Mr. Hallam.
I beg you'll not call me Mr. Hallam. I hate the name.
Mm. Black Paquito is your pet name, isn't it?
I'm not usually called so to my face.
I'm so sorry. You know, you're wonderfully like your uncle.
Damnation.
What?
If I thought my veins contained a drop of his black blood, I'd drain them empty with my knife. I have no relations. I had a mother, that was all.
Yes, I dare say you had your mother's complexion. But didn't you notice Sir Howard's temper, his doggedness, his high spirit, and above all, his belief in ruling people by force, as you rule your men? And in revenge and punishment, just as you want to revenge your mother. Well, didn't you recognize yourself in that?
Myself? In that?
Did the sleeve catch you at all under the arm? Oh. Perhaps I'd better make it a little easier for you.
Let my coat alone. It'll do very well as it is. Put it down.
Oh, please don't ask me to sit down here doing nothing. It bores me so. In
heaven's name, then do what you like, and don't worry me with it.
Oh, I'm so sorry. All the Hallams are irritable.
As I've already said, that remark has no application to me.
You know, that's so funny. They all hate to be told that they're like one another.
Why did you come here? My trap wasn't laid for you, it was laid for him. Remember, he sent my mother to prison.
Were you very fond of your poor mother and always very good to her?
Well, it wasn't worse than either son's, I suppose.
Oh, was that all?
You don't understand. It wasn't always possible to be very tender with my mother. She had, unfortunately, a very violent temper, and she...
Yes, yes. So you told Howard. You must have had a very unhappy childhood.
That was hell. That was my childhood. Hell.
Do you think she would really have killed Howard, as she threatened, if he hadn't sent her to prison?
Now, what if she did? Why did he rob her? Why didn't he help her to...
He says he couldn't, you know. But perhaps the real reason was that he didn't like her. You know, don't you, that if you don't like people, you think of all the reasons for not helping them. And if you like them, well, you think of all the opposite reasons.
But his duty as a brother.
Are you going to do your duty as a nephew?
Don't quibble with me. I'm going to do my duty as a son, and you know it.
Yes, but I should have thought that the time for that was in your mother's lifetime, when you could have been kind and forbearing with her. Hurting your uncle won't do her any good, you know.
It'll teach other scoundrels to respect widows and orphans. You forget there's such a thing as justice.
Oh, in ermine and call yourself justice, I give you up. You're just your uncle all over again. Only he gets 5,000 a year for it, and you do it for nothing.
You twist my words very cleverly. But no man or woman has ever changed me.
Now, will you try on this coat for me? I'm so afraid I've made it tight under the arm.
You take me for a fool, I think.
Oh, no. All men look foolish when they're feeling for their sleeves. Stop. You must must never pull a coat at the skirts like that, Captain Brassbound. It spoils the sit of it. Allow me. Now, put back your shoulders. That's better. Now, button the rest from the top down. Does it catch you at all under the arm?
No.
That's right, then. Now, before I go back to poor Matzo, say thank you to me for mending your jacket like a nice polite sailor.
Damn you. You have belittled my whole life to me.
Oh, no. I'm sure you've done lots of kind things, recollect them. With Gordon, for instance. Well, no one can belittle that.
Captain, look. Here's a Plymouth ship just appeared on the horizon with about 50 men. They'll be here inside of 10 minutes, sir.
The chase?
City of La Cif and 50 men? Ah, Lady Cicely, you were too late. I gave you up my vengeance when it was no longer in my hand. Call all hands to stand by and shut the gates. Then all here to me for orders and bring the prisoner.
Right, Captain, right.
Well, is there any real danger for Howard?
Yes, danger for all of us, unless I keep my bargain with this fanatic.
What bargain?
I'd pay him so much a head for every party I escort through to the interior. In return, he protects me, an oath to him to take only Jews and true believers, no Christians, you understand?
Oh, but then why did you take us?
I took my uncle on purpose and sent word to Sidi that he was here.
Well, that's a pretty kettle of fish, isn't it?
I'll do what I can to save him and you. But I fear my repentance has come too late, as repentance usually does.
Oh, well, I must go and look after Matsu at all events.
Governor.
Where's Drinkwater?
Take your hands off me.
What? Look out. Look here, Captain. We don't much like this job.
Huh?
The gentleman here has been talking to us a bit, and we think that he is a gentleman and talks straight sense.
He's offered a present of 500 quid if he gets safe back to Mogador, Governor. Excuse my mentioning it.
Myself and Lady Cicely.
What? A judge compound a felony, you greenhorns? Is more likely to send you all to penal servitude if you're fools enough to give him the chance.
So he would. Phew.
Right. Now, have you any other card to play? Any other bribe? Any other threat? Quick time presses?
My life is in the hands of Providence. Do your worst.
Or my best. I still have that choice.
Here, Captain. Look, there's another lot coming over from the southeast.
What?
Hundreds of them this time. The old desert's like a blooming Hyde Park demonstration. I believe it's the Cardi from Kintafi.
The Cardi? How far off?
A matter of 2 miles, Governor.
We're saved. Open the gates to the Sheikh. Look at Hyde, they're gone.
No. Listen, Captain. Listen. Sir Howard will give us 500 reddens. Well, won't you speak to him, Mr. Johnson? Mr. Redbrook?
Now then, do you understand plain English? Johnson and Redbrook. Take what men you want and open the gates to the Sheikh. And let him come straight to me. Look at Howard Hallam. You have one chance left. The Cadi of Kintafi stands superior to the Sheikh as the responsible governor of the whole province. It's the Cadi who will be sacrificed by the Sultan if England demands satisfaction for any injury of you. If we can hold the Sheikh in parley until the Cadi arrives, you may frighten the Cadi into forcing the Sheikh to release you. The Cadi's coming's a lucky chance for you.
If it were a real chance, you wouldn't tell me of it. No. Don't try to play cat and mouse with me, man.
It ain't much of a chance, Sir Howard. But if there was a gunboat in Mogador Harbour, I'd put a bit on it, I would.
Here they are, Governor.
This is the infidel, Cadi. This is the brass band, the friend Gastani.
It's the commander of the faithful and his vizier Osman.
Where is the woman?
This shameless one is not here.
Sidi El Asif, kinsman of the Prophet, you are welcome.
There is no majesty and no might save in Allah, the glorious, the great.
Here he is.
Where did you pick that up?
Captain Burton's Arabian Nights, a copy in the library of the National Liberal Club.
Mr. Drinkwater, will you come and help me with Marcio?
The shameless one, shall we hide her face before she enters?
No.
Sidi El Asif, isn't it? How do you do?
Woman, touch not the kinsman of the Prophet.
Oh, I see. I'm being presented at court. Very good. I shall curtsy.
Sidi El Asif, this is one of the mighty women sheikhs of Frangistan. She goes unveiled among kings, and only princes may touch her hand.
Allah upon thee, Sidi El Asif. Now be a good little sheikh and shake hands.
Now this is a wonderful thing, and worthy to be chronicled with the story of Solomon and the Queen of Sheba. Is it not so, Osman Ali?
Allah upon thee, Master, it is so.
Brassbound Ali, the oath of a just man fulfills itself without many words. The infidel Cadi, thy captive, falls to my share.
It cannot be, Sidi Al Asif. The price of his blood will be required of our lord the Sultan. I will take him to Morocco and deliver him up there.
Brass bound, I am in mine own house and amid mine own people. I am the Sultan here. Consider what you say. When my word goes forth for life or death, it may not be recalled.
Sidi Al Asif, I will buy the man from you at what price you choose to name, and if I do not pay faithfully, you shall take my head for his.
It is well. You shall keep the man and give me the woman in payment.
No.
Yes, certainly, Mr. Sidi, certainly.
Impossible.
You don't know what you're doing.
Oh, don't I? I've not crossed Africa and stayed with six cannibals to city. I'll be delighted.
But you're mad. Do you suppose this man will treat you as a European gentleman would?
No, he'll treat me like one of nature's gentlemen. Look at his perfectly splendid face. Osman, now be sure you choose me a good horse and get a nice, strong camel for my luggage.
She'll march them all to church next Sunday like a blooming lot of charity kids. You see if she don't.
Goodbye, Howard. Now, don't be anxious about me. And above all, don't bring a parcel of men with guns to rescue me. I'll be quite all right now that I'm getting away from the escort. Captain Brathbug.
Yes.
I rely on you to see that Sir Howard gets safe to Mogador. And take your hand off that pistol. Goodbye. The Cuddy! The Cuddy! He's in anger! His men are upon us!
No,
defend! Defend!
Thou child of mischief!
Damn I a dog, Mulyatman, that thou speakest thus to me!
Wilt thou destroy thy country and give us all into the hands of them that set the sea on fire but yesterday with their ships of war? Where are the Franquistani captives?
Here we are, Cuddy. How do you do?
Ah, Allah upon thee, thou moon and the pool. Where is thy kinsman, the Cadi of Rangwistan? I am his friend, his servant. I come on behalf of my master, the Sultan, to do him honor and to cast down his enemies.
You're very good, I'm sure.
Muli Otman.
Peace, peace, thou inconsiderate one.
Cadi.
Oh, thou dog, thou. Thou accursed, brass-bound son of a wanton. It is thou hast led Sidi El Asif into this wrongdoing. Read this writing that thou hast brought upon me from the commander of the warship.
Warship?
Gunboat, perhaps.
Like blooming Waterloo buses they are on this coast.
Well, sir, are we not going to have the benefit of that letter? Your men are waiting to hear it, I think.
It's not a British ship.
Well, what is it then?
An American cruiser, the Santiago.
Whoa, alas, it is where they set the sea on fire.
Peace, Mully Otman, Allah is still above us.
Would you mind reading it to us, Captain?
Oh, I'll read it to you. Mogador Harbour, 26th of September, 1899. Captain Hamlin Kearney of the cruiser Santiago presents the compliments of the United States to the Cadi Mully Otman El Kintafi and announces that he is Sir Howard Hallam and Lady Cicely Wainfleet in the Cadi's jurisdiction. As the search will be conducted with machine guns, the prompt return of the travellers to Mogador Harbour will save much trouble to all parties.
As I live, Bokadi, and thou, moon of loveliness, ye shall be led back to Mogador with honour. And thou, thou accursed brassbound, shalt go thither a prisoner in chains, thou and thy people. Caesar!
Oh, no, please don't fight.
The woman is mine! I will not forego her!
I told you you were not in a strong position, Captain Brassbound. You are laid by the heels, my friend, as I said you would be.
But I assure you...
What have you to assure him of? You persuaded me to spare him. Now look at his face. Will you be able to persuade him to spare me?
Take him away!
Torrid forenoon, filtered through small Moorish windows high up in the adobe walls of the last. A clean, cool room. With the table set in the middle, a presidentially elbowed chair behind it, and an inkstand and paper ready for the sitter. A couple of cheap American chairs, right and left of the table, facing the same way as the presidential chair, give a judicial aspect to the arrangement. Rankin is placing a little tray with a jug and some glasses near the inkstand when Lady Cicely's voice is heard at the door.
Good morning. May I come in?
Oh, certainly. Sit you do, Lady Cicely.
Oh, how nice you made the room for the inquiry.
I could wish there were more chairs. Your American captain will preside in this, and that leaves but one for Sir Howard and one for your ladyship. I could almost be tempted to call it a mercy that your friend that owns the yacht has sprained his ankle and cannot come. I misdoubt me it will not look judicial to have Captain Kearney's officers squatting on the floor.
Oh, they won't mind. What about the prisoners?
They are to be brought here from the town jail presently.
And where's that silly old Cardi and my handsome Sheikh Sidi? I must see them before the inquiry. Or they'll give Captain Kearney quite a false impression of what happened.
But you cannot see them. They decamped last night back to their castles in the Atlas.
No!
Indeed they did. Poor Cardi is so terrified by all he has heard of the destruction of the Spanish fleet that he daren't trust himself in the captain's hands. And on our journey back here, you seem to have frightened the poor man yourself, Lady Cicely, by talking to him about the fanatical Christianity of the Americans. You've largely yourself to thank if he's gone.
Now, there'll be praise. What a weight off our minds, Mr. Rankin.
And why? Do you not understand how necessary their evidence
their is? Their evidence? It'd spoil everything. They'd perjure themselves out of pure spite against poor Captain Brassbound.
Do you call him poor Captain Brassbound? Does not your ladyship know that this Brassbound is, heaven forgive me for judging him, a precious scoundrel? Did you not hear what Sir Howard told me on the yacht last night?
All a mistake, Mr. Rankin. All a mistake, I assure you. You said just now, heaven forgive you for judging him. Well, that's just what the whole quarrel is about. Captain Brassbound's just like you. He thinks we have no right to judge the year for doing nothing else but judge people. He thinks poor Captain Brassbound a regular anarchist. Oh, they quarreled most dreadfully at the castle. You really mustn't mind what Sir Howard says about him. You really must.
But his conduct...
Perfectly saintly, Mr. Rankin. Worthy of yourself in your best moments. He forgave Sir Howard and did all he could to save him.
You astonish me, Lady Cicely.
Well, and think of the temptation to behave badly when he had all of us there helpless.
The temptation? Aye, that's true. You are bonny to be cast away among a parcel of lone, lawless men, my lady.
Oh, bless me, that's quite true, dear. I never thought of it. Oh, after that, you really must...
No, I cannot say that, Lady Cicely. I doubt he has imposed on your good nature and sweet disposition. I had a crack with the Cardi as well as with Sir Howard, and there is little question in my mind but that Captain Brassbound is no better than a brigand.
Well, I wonder whether he can be, Mr. Rankin. If you think so, of course, that's heavily against him, in my opinion, because you have more knowledge of men than anyone else here. Perhaps I'm mistaken to help him as the son of your old friend.
The son of my old friend? What do you mean?
Oh, but didn't Sir Howard tell you that? Why, Captain Brassbound turns out to be Sir Howard's nephew, the son of the brother you knew.
Oh, I saw the likeness the night he came here. Yes, it's true, it's true. Uncle and nephew.
Yes, that's why they quarrel so.
I think Sir Howard might have told me.
Of course he ought to have told you. You see, he only tells one side of the story. That comes from his training as a barrister. You mustn't think he's naturally deceitful. I mean, if he'd been brought up as a clergyman, he'd have told you the whole truth as a matter of course.
Lady Cicely, I must go to the prison and see the lad. Well, he may have been a bit wild, but I can't leave poor Miles' son unbefriended in a foreign jail.
Oh, how good of you. I have a really kind heart of gold, Mr. Rankin. Now, before you go, shall we just put our heads together and consider how to give Miles' son every chance? I mean, of course, every chance that he ought to have.
I'm so confused by this astonishing news.
Yes, yes, of course you are. But don't you think he'd make a better impression on the American captain if he were a little more respectably dressed?
Aye, maybe, but how can that be remedied here in Mogador?
Well, I thought of that.
Oh.
You know I'm going back to England. A portmanteau full of clothes for my brother there. He's ambassador, you know, and has to be very particular as to what he wears. I had the portmanteau brought here this morning. Now, would you mind taking it to the prison and smartening up Captain Brassbound a little? I mean, tell him he ought to do it to show his respect for me. Yes, and he will. It'll be quite easy. There are two crew boys waiting to carry the portmanteau. Oh, you will. Yes, I know you will. And do you think it's time to get him shaved?
I'll do my best.
I know you will. Oh, and one word, Mr. Rankin. The Cardi didn't know that Captain Brassbound was Sir Howard's nephew, did he?
No.
Quite dreadfully. I'm afraid, Mr. Rankin, though, who you know best, of course, that we are bound not to repeat anything at the inquiry that the Cardi said. He didn't know, you see.
I take your point, Lady Cicely. It alters the case. I shall certainly make no allusion to it.
Well, then I won't either. There.
Good morning, Mr. Rankin. I hope you got home safely from the yacht last night.
Quite safe, thank you.
Now, Howard, he's in a hurry. Don't make him stop to talk.
Lady Cicely.
Oh, bless you, Mr. Rankin. Oh, I'm so sorry for you, Howard, about this unfortunate inquiry.
Sorry for me? Why?
Why, it looks so dreadful. Your own nephew, you know.
Cicely, an English judge has no nephews, no sons even, when he has to carry out the law.
Yeah, but then he oughtn't to have any property either. People will never understand about the West Indian estate. They'll think you're the wicked uncle out of the Babes in the Wood. Oh, I'm so very, very sorry for you.
I really don't see how I need your commiseration, Cicely. The woman was an impossible person, half mad, half drunk. Do you understand what such a creature is when she has a grievance and imagines some innocent person to be the author of it?
Oh, quite. That'll be made clear enough. I can see it all in the papers already. Our half-mad, half-drunk sister-in-law making scenes with you in the street with the police called in and prison and all the rest of it. Oh, the family will be furious. Think of Papa.
I shall expect Lord Wayne Fleet to look at the matter as a reasonable man.
Do you think he's so greatly changed as that, Howard?
My dear Cicely, there's no use discussing the matter. It cannot be helped, however disagreeable it may be.
Of course not. That's what you're dreadful.
Hey, whether they do or not, I cannot help it.
Of course, if you were anybody but a judge, it wouldn't matter so much. But a judge mustn't even be misunderstood. Oh, it's dreadful, how terrible. What would poor Mary say if she were alive now?
I don't think, Cicely, that my dear wife would misunderstand me.
Oh, no, no, she'd know you mean well. And when you came home and said, Mary, I've just told all the world that your sister-in-law was a police court criminal and that I sent her to prison. And your nephew was a brigand and I'm sending him to prison. Well, she'd have thought it must be all right because you did it. But you don't think she would have liked it any more than Papa and the rest of us, do you?
Well, what am I to do? Do you ask me to compound a felony?
Certainly not. I wouldn't allow such a thing, even if you were wicked enough to attempt it. No, what I say is you oughtn't to tell the story yourself.
Why?
Well, because everybody will say you're such a clever lawyer. You could make a poor, simple sailor like Captain Kearney believe anything. The proper thing for you to do, Howard, is to let me tell the exact truth. Then you can simply say that you're bound to confirm me. I mean, nobody can blame you for that.
Cicely, you're up to some devilment.
Oh, very well. Tell the story yourself in your own clever way. I only propose to tell the exact truth. You call that devilment. Well, so it is, I dare say, from a lawyer's point of view.
I hope you're not offended.
My dear Howard, not a bit. Of course you're right. You know how these things ought to be done. I'll do exactly what you tell me and confirm everything you say.
Oh, my dear, you mustn't act in my interest. You must give your evidence with absolute impartiality. That there is something to be said for your proposal to relieve me of the very painful duty of telling what has occurred.
Oh, yes, but you'd do it so very much better.
Yes, for that very reason, perhaps it had better come from you.
Well, if you rather...
But mind, Cicely, the exact truth.
The exact truth.
Fiat justitia, ruit colum.
Yes, let justice be done, though the ceiling fall.
Captain Kearney's compliments to Lady Wainfleet. May he come in.
Oh, yes, yes, by all means. Where are the prisoners?
Party gone to jail to fetch him, ma'am.
Oh, thank you. I'd like to be told when they're coming, if I might.
You shall so, ma'am.
I'm so glad you've come, Captain Kearney.
When we parted yesterday afternoon, Lady Wainfleet, I was on a ship. You had entirely altered the sleeping arrangements of my stokers. I thank you. As captain of the ship, I am customarily consulted before the orders of English visitors are carried out. But as your alterations appear to conduce to the comfort of the men, I have not interfered with them.
Oh, how clever of you to find out. I believe you know every bolt in the ship.
I'm really very sorry that my sister-in-law has taken so serious a liberty, Captain Kearney.
Oh.
It's a mania of hers, simply a mania.
Prisoners coming up the hill, ma'am.
Who sent you in to say that?
British lady's orders, sir.
I'm really very sorry, Captain Kearney. I'm quite aware that Lady Cicely has no right whatever...
Just asked him. He has such a nice face, don't you think so, Captain Kearney? And now, will you excuse me a moment? I want to speak to somebody before the inquiry begins.
There is certainly a wonderful charm about the British aristocracy, Sir Howard Hallam. Are they all like that?
Fortunately not, Captain Kearney. Half a dozen such women would make an end of law in England in 6 months.
All ready, sir.
Very good. I'm waiting. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, good morning, sir.
You will be glad to hear that I have a very good account of one of our prisoners from our chaplain who visited them in jail. He has expressed the wish to be converted to Episcopalianism.
Yes, I think I know him.
Bring in the prisoners.
They are engaged with a British lady, sir. Shall I ask...
Bring in the prisoners. Tell the lady those are my orders. Do you hear? Tell us so.
Sir.
Mr. Rankin will be present, I presume.
Rankin. Who is Rankin?
Our host, the missionary.
Oh, Rankin, is he? He better look sharp or he'll be late. What are...
Is Mr. Rankin? Captain Kearney.
Oh, excuse my delay, Captain Kearney. The lady sent me on an errand. I thought I should be late. But the first thing I had when I arrived was your officer giving your compliments to Lady Cicely, and would she kindly allow the prisoners to come in, as you were anxious to see her again. Then I knew I was in time.
That was it, was it? May I ask, sir, did you notice any sign on Lady Wainfleet's part of complying with that very moderate request?
Coming, coming!
Yeah, bring in the prisoners. Is this another gentleman of your party, Lady Wainfleet? I presume I met you last night, sir, on board the yacht.
No, I'm your prisoner. My name is Brassband.
Captain Brassband of the schooner, thanks, ship up, you fool.
Well, I hardly understand this. I've never seen a pirate in a frock coat and trousers. However, if you are Captain Brassband, you can take your place with the rest.
Thank you.
Now, let me see. You are a man of experience in these matters, Sir Hardhelm. If you had to conduct this business, how would you start?
You'd call on the counsel for the prosecution, wouldn't you, Howard?
But there is no counsel for the prosecution, Cicely.
Oh, yes, there is, there is. I'm counsel for the prosecution. You mustn't let Sir Howard make a speech, Captain Kearney. His doctors have positively forbidden anything of the sort. Will you begin with me?
By your leave, Lady Wainfleet, I think I will just begin with myself. Sailor player fashion.
Ever so much better, dear Captain Kearney. Oh, you look so nice as a judge.
She does. Shut up, you fool, will you?
Cicely.
Your ladyship's compliments will be in order at a later stage. Captain Brassbaum, the position is this. My ship, the United States Cruiser San Diego, was spoken off Mogador last Thursday by the yacht Red Gauntlet. The owner of the foresaid yacht is not present, though having sprained his ankle, gave me certain information. In consequence of that information, the San Diego made the 20 miles to Mogador Harbor inside 57 minutes. Before noon next day, a messenger of mine gave the Cady of the district certain information. In consequence of that information, the Cady stimulated himself to some 10 knots and lodged you and your men in Mogador jail at my disposal. The Cady then went back to his mountain fastness, so we shall not have the pleasure of his company here today. Do you follow me so far?
Yes, I know what you did and what the Cady did. The point is, why did you do it?
With due patience, we shall come to that presently. Mr. Rankin, will you kindly take up the parable?
On the very day that Sir Howard and Lady Cicely started on their excursion by a follower of the Sheikh Sidi El Asif, he told me I should never see Sir Howard again, because his master knew he was a Christian and would take him out of the hands of Captain Brassbound. I hurried on board the yacht and told the owner to scour the coast for a gunboat or cruiser to come into the harbor and put persuasion on the authorities.
But I understood from our chaplain that you reported with the Sheikh to deliver Sir Howard up to him.
Well, that was my first hasty conclusion, Captain Kearney. But it appears that the compact between them was that Captain Brassbound should escort travelers under the Sheikh's protection at a certain payment per head, provided none of them were Christians. As I understand it, he tried to smuggle Sir Howard through under this compact, and the Sheikh found him out.
Right, Governor, that's just how it was. But
shut up, you fool.
May I ask, have you had any conversation with Lady Cicely on this subject?
Yes.
Well, I see no harm so far. It's human folly, not human counsel for the prosecution can proceed to prosecute. The floor is yours, Lady Wainfleet.
Well, I can only tell you the exact truth.
Oh, no, don't do that, lady. Shut up, you fool.
We had a most delightful trip in the hills, and Captain Brassbound's men couldn't have been nicer, I must say that for them, until we saw a tribe of Arabs. Oh, such nice-looking men. And then the poor things were frightened.
The Arabs?
No. The Arabs are never frightened. The escort, of course. Escorts are always frightened. I wanted to speak to the Arab chief, but Captain Brassbound cruelly shot his horse, and the chief shot the count, and then...
The count? What count?
Marzo. That's Marzo.
Signore.
What happened then?
Well, then the escort ran away. All escorts do. And they dragged me into the castle, which you really ought to make. Then Captain Brassbound and Sir Howard turned out to be related to one another.
No, related.
And of course there was a quarrel. The Hallams always quarrel.
Cicely, Captain Kearney, this man told me...
You mustn't say what people told you. It's not evidence.
Allow the lady to proceed, Sir Howard Hallam.
I beg your pardon, Captain Kearney.
Well, then, Sidi came.
Sidney? Who is Sidney?
No, Sidi, the Sheikh. Sidi Alassif, a noble creature with such a fine face. He fell in love with me at first sight.
Cicely!
He did. You told me to tell the exact truth.
I can readily believe it, ma'am. Proceed.
Well, that put the poor fellow into the most cruel dilemma. You see, he could claim to carry off Sir Howard because Sir Howard is a Christian. But as I'm only a woman, he had no claim on me.
But you are a Christian woman.
Oh, no, the Arabs don't count women. They don't believe we have any soul. Yes, well, now, what was he to do? He wasn't in love with Sir Howard, and he was in love with me. So he naturally offered to swap Sir Howard for me. Now, don't you think it was very nice of him, Captain Kearney?
I should have done the same myself, Lady Wainfleet. Proceed.
Well, Captain Brassbound, I must say, was nobleness itself, in spite of the quarrel between himself and Sir Howard. He refused to give up either of us, and was on the point of fighting for us, when in came the Cady with your most amusing and delightful letter, Captain, and bundled us all back to Mogador, after calling my poor Sidi the most dreadful names and putting all the blame on Captain Brassburn. So now, Howard, isn't that the exact truth, every word of it?
Yes, it's the truth, Cicely, and nothing but the truth. But the English law requires a witness to tell the whole truth.
Oh, what nonsense, as if anybody ever knew the whole truth about anything. I'm so sorry that you wish Captain Kearney to understand that I'm an untruthful witness.
No,
very well then. Please don't say things that convey that impression.
But Sir Howard told me yesterday that Captain Brassbound threatened to sell him into slavery.
Well, did Sir Howard tell you the things he said about Captain Brassbound's mother? I told you they quarreled, Captain Kearney. I said so, now, didn't I?
Distinctly.
Yes, sir.
Well, of course I did. Now, Captain Kearney, do you want me, does Sir Howard want me, I mean, does anybody want me to go into the details of that shocking family quarrel? Am I to stand here in the absence of any individual of my own sex and repeat the language of two angry men?
The United States Navy will have no hand in offering any violence to the pure instincts of womanhood. Lady Wainfleet, I thank you for the delicacy with which you have given your evidence. You're responsible for what you have said when the English bench addressed you in the language of the English forecastle. No, Sir Howard Hallam, excuse me. In the moments of passion, I have called a man that myself. We are all glad to find real flesh and blood beneath the ermine of the judge. We will now drop the subject that should never have been broached in a lady's presence. Accept this lady's account of what happened, Captain Brassbound?
Yes, it's true, as far as it goes.
Do you want it to go any further?
Signore, she has left out something. The Arabs shoot me. She nursed me, secure me.
And who are you, pray?
Only a damn thief, a damn liar, a damn rascal. She is no lady.
What? What's that you say?
No lady would nurse a damn rascal, only a saint. She is a saint. She get me to heaven. Get us all to heaven. We do what we like now.
Indeed, you'll do nothing of the sort, Marzo, unless you like to behave yourself very nicely indeed. What hour did you say we were to lunch at, Captain Kearney?
Oh, yeah. You recall me to my duty, Lady Wainfleet. My barge will be ready to take off you and Sir Howard to San Diego at 1:00. Captain Brassbound, this inquiry has elicited no reason why I should detain you and your men. I advise you to act as escort in future to heathens exclusively. Mr. Rankin, I thank you in the name of the United States for having me back in my ship with a view to lunch at 1:30. Gentlemen, we will wait on the governor of the jail on our way to the harbor.
Cicely, in the course of my professional career, I've met with unscrupulous witnesses, and I'm sorry to say, unscrupulous counsel also. But the combination of unscrupulous witness and unscrupulous counsel I've met today has taken away my breath. You've made me an accomplice in defeating justice.
Yes, and aren't you glad it's been defeated for once? Right before I go, come on, Howard.
Oh, very well.
I'm right glad you're cleared.
Thank you.
Well, I'll come back and have a crack with you when the lunch is over. God bless you.
Free! Now to get rid of this respectable clobber and feel like a man again. Stand by all hands to jump on the captain's tall hat.
Oh, no, look here, Captain, that's not right. Draw the line,
sir. I agree it's a bit of fun, Captain, but let's be gentle.
Yes, to you, Brassbun. The clubber belongs to Lady Sis. Ain't you going to give it back to her?
Well, that's true. I'm a fool. All the same, she'll not see me again like this. Oh, does any man here know how to fold up this sort of thing properly?
Allow me, Governor.
Now, off with this shirt!
Double combination, Governor. Church warden from the waist down and the rest pirate. Lady Sis won't speak to you in it.
I'll change altogether and get me on trousers.
Look here, Johnson, and gents generally. Suppose she takes him back to England.
Him? Him only a damn pirate. She's a saint, I tell you. She not take any man nowhere.
Don't you be an ignorant and immoderate foreigner. She won't take him for harm, but she might take him for good. And then where should we be?
Brassband isn't the only captain in the world. What makes a captain is brains and knowledge of life. Mind you, it ain't that there's no such person. It's that you don't know where to look for him.
Stand by, all. Redbrook, you pack that clobber in the lady's portmanteau and put it on board the yacht for her. Johnson, you take all hands aboard the Thanksgiving. Look through the stores, weigh anchor, make all ready for sea, and then send Jack to wait for me on the slip with the boat. And give me a gunfire for a signal.
Oh,
So you've taken off those beautiful clothes I gave you.
Well, a man should wear his own clothes. And a man should tell his own lies. I'm sorry you had to tell mine for me today.
Oh, women spend half their lives telling little lies for men. And sometimes big ones. We're used to it. But mind, I don't admit I told any today.
How did you square my uncle?
I don't understand the expression.
I mean...
I'm afraid we haven't time to go into that before lunch. I want to speak to you about your future now. May I?
Please do.
Well...
I have no plans. You'll hear a gun fired in the harbour presently. That'll mean the Thanksgiving's anchor's weighed and that she's waiting for her captain to put out to sea. And her captain doesn't know now whether to turn her head north or south.
Why not north for England?
Why not south for the Pole?
But you must do something with yourself.
Look, you. When you and I first met, I was a man with a purpose. I stood alone. I saddled no friend, woman or man with that purpose because it was against law, against religion, against my own credit and safety. But I believed in it. And I stood alone for it. As a man should stand for his belief against law and religion as much as against wickedness and selfishness. Whatever I may be, I'm none of your fair-weather sailors that'll do nothing for their creed but go to heaven for it. I was ready to go to hell for mine. Perhaps you don't understand that.
Oh, bless you, yes, it's so very like a certain sort of man.
I dare say, but I've not met many of that sort. Anyhow, that's what I was like. I wasn't unhappy because I wasn't drifting. I was steering a course and had work in hand. Give a man health and a course to steer and he'll never stop to trouble about whether he's happy or not.
Well, sometimes he won't even stop to trouble about whether other people are happy or not.
I don't deny that. Nothing makes a man so selfish as work. But I wasn't self-seeking. It seemed to me that I'd put justice above self. I tell you, life meant something. You see this dirty little bundle of scraps of paper?
Yes, what are they?
Accounts cut out of newspapers. Speeches made by my uncle at charitable dinners, or sentencing men to death. Pious, high-minded speeches... by a man who was to me a thief and a murderer. To my mind, they were more weighty, more momentous, better revelations of the wickedness of law and respectability than a book of the prophet Amos. What are they now?
Oh, well, that's a comfort at all events.
Yes, but a doing, remember? All of her left. You see here, the letters my uncle wrote to my mother. With her comments on their cold, drawn insolence, their treachery and cruelty. And the piteous letters she wrote to him later on, returned unopened. Must they go too?
Well, I can't ask you to destroy your mother's letters.
Why not, now that you've taken the meaning out of them? There. Now, is that a comfort too?
Well, it's a little sad, but perhaps it's better so.
That leaves one relic. Her portrait.
Oh, do let me see. Oh.
You expected something better than that. Well, you're right. Her face doesn't look well opposite yours.
I said nothing.
What could you say?
Oh, no, don't. Don't tear your mother's picture.
If that were your picture, would you like your son to keep it for younger and better women to see?
Oh, you're dreadful. Yes, tear it, tear it.
You killed her for me that day in the castle. And I'm better without her. Now, everything is gone. You've taken the old meaning out of my life, but you put no new meaning into it. I can see that you have some clue to the world that makes all its difficulties easy for you, but I'm not clever enough to seize it. You blamed me by showing me that I take life the wrong way when I'm left to myself.
Oh, no, no, but why do you say that?
What else can I say? See what I've done. My uncle is no worse a man than myself. Better, most likely, for he had a better head and a better place. Well, I took him for a villain out of a storybook. My mother would have opened anyone else's eyes. She shut mine. I see that now, if you've opened my eyes to the past. But what good is that for the future? What am I to do? Where am I to go?
Oh, it's quite simple. Just do.
That answer's no good to me. What I like is to have something to do, and I have nothing. You might as well... talk like the missionary and tell me to do my duty.
Oh, no, thank you. I've had quite enough of your duty and Howard's duty. Where would you both be now if I let you do it?
We'd have been somewhere at all events. Seems to me that now I'm nowhere.
But aren't you coming back to England with us?
What for?
Well,
well, to make the most of your opportunities.
What opportunities?
But don't you understand that when you're the nephew of a great bigwig and have influential connections and good friends among them, lots of things can be done for you that are never done for ordinary ship captains.
But I'm not an aristocrat, you see. And like most poor men, I'm proud. I don't like being patronized.
Oh, goodness, well, it is the use of saying that. In my world, which is now your world, patronage is a whole art of life. A man can't have a career without it.
In my world, a man can navigate a ship and get his living by it.
Oh, I see you're one of the idealists. Yes, we have them too, occasionally, in our world. And there's only one thing to be done with them.
What's that?
Marry them straight off to some girl with enough money for them and plenty of sentiment. That's their fate.
You've spoiled even that chance for me. Do you think I could look at any ordinary woman after you? You seem to be able to make me do pretty well what you like, but you can't make me marry anybody but yourself.
Do you know, Captain Paquito, that I've married no less than 17 men to other women? And they all opened the subject by saying they'd never marry anybody but me.
Then I shall be the first man you ever found to stand by his word.
Do you really want a wife?
I want a commander. Don't undervalue me. I'm a good man when I have a good leader. I've courage and I have determination. I'm not a drinker. I can command a schooner and a shore party if I can't command a ship or an army. When work's put upon me, I turn neither to save my life nor to fill my pocket. Gordon trusted me, and he never regretted it. If you trust me, you shan't regret it. And all the same, there's something wanting in me. I suppose I'm stupid.
Oh, no, you're not stupid.
Yes, I am. Since you saw me for the first time in that garden, you've heard me say nothing clever, and I've heard you say nothing that didn't make me laugh or make me feel friendly, as well as telling me what to think and what to do. That's what I mean by real cleverness. Well, I haven't got it. I can give an order when I know what order to give. I can make men obey it, willing or unwilling, but I'm stupid, I tell you. Stupid. When there's no Gordon to command me, I can't think of what to do. Left to myself, I've become half a brigand. I can kick that little gutter scrub drink water, but I find myself doing what he puts into my head because I can't think of anything else. When you came, I took your orders as naturally as I took Gordon's, though I little thought my next command was to take service under you. And there's no way in which that can be done except by marrying you. Will you let me do it?
Well, I'm afraid you don't quite know how odd a match it would be for me. According to the ideas of English society.
I care nothing about English society. Let it mind its own business.
Captain Paquito, I'm not in love with you.
I didn't suppose you were. The commander's not usually in love with his subordinate.
Nor the subordinate with the commander.
Nor the subordinate with the commander.
Oh, you're dangerous.
Come, are you in love with anybody else? That's the question.
I have never been in love with any real person, and I never shall. How could I manage people if I hadn't that mad little bit of self left in me? That's my secret.
Then throw away the last bit of self.
Must I?
Well, there's no must. You can. I ask you to. My fate depends on it.
Oh, it's frightful. I don't mean to. I don't wish to.
But you will.
I... What is that?
It is farewell. A rescue for you. Safety. Freedom. You were made to be something better than the wife of Black Paquito. You can do no more for me now. I've blundered somehow on the secret of command at last. Thanks for that. And for a man's power and purpose restored and well. Farewell. Farewell.
Oh, farewell. With my heart's deepest feeling, farewell. Farewell.
With my heart's noblest honor and triumph, farewell.
How glorious, how glorious. And what an escape.
Sybil Thorndyke starred as Lady Cicely Wainfleet, with Cecil Parker as Sir Hard Hallam, and Gabriel Wolfe as Captain Brassbound in Captain Brassbound's Conversion. By Bernard Shaw. Drinkwater was played by James McManus, Rankin by Dennis Hawthorne, and Captain Kearney by John Justin. Johnson was Ralph Truman,
Redbrook, Bernard Brown, Sidi El Asif, Alric Cotter, Lacady, Anthony Vickers, Martzo, Robert Rietti, Osman, Frank Henderson, the American Blue Jacket, Nigel Clayton, and the narrator was Alexander John. The shortened version of the play was prepared for radio by Cedric Messina, and the production was by Graham Gall. This was the last play in the Sybil Thorndyke